מעשה בזקן אחד שהיה גונח מליבו, הלך אצל רופא, ציווה עליו הרופא שישתה חלב עיזים, יצא וקנה לו עז והכניס על הדיר. לא היו ימים.
I'm Jeffrey Sachs of Beit Agnon, and you are listening to the inimical voice of Shmuel Yosef Agnon, Hebrew literature's only Nobel laureate in Hebrew literature, won in 1966. This recording of Agnon reading Ma'aseh Ha'ez to his grandchildren is something that floats around in Beit Agnon and is available. We've made it available on our YouTube channel and on our website, and is used from time to time. I myself, having taught the story many times, have made good use of it. And I never had any idea of where it came from. And recently, in a conversation with my new friend, Kurt Leviant, I came to discover his role in bringing it about to the world. And in further discussions with Kurt, who is a very well-known and well-regarded and accomplished professor of Hebrew and Jewish literature, much of his career having been spent at Rutgers University, is himself a novelist of very many books, an essayist, and one of the most distinguished translators of Hebrew and Yiddish literature into English over a very, very long career. I came to discover his little role, his anecdote about how this recording came about, and his own personal interactions with Agnon. And, you know, these days there are fewer and fewer people with first-person tales to tell, and it's a kind of oral history. We thought it would be interesting to meet together with Kurt, who's joining us from his home in New Jersey, to hear how this came about and about some of the many other interesting things in his long and illustrious career that intersect with our interests at Beit Agnon and with the interests of our listeners, all of whom, of course, are aficionados of Agnon's writings and of Jewish culture. So first of all, Kurt, welcome. We're so happy to have you with us and to learn. So before we get into more about yourself and your work and your translations and your writing, tell us a little about the story of how you came into Agnon's orbit and what's the story behind this recording of Ma'aseh Ha'ez, the fable of the goat, one of the very few recordings that we possess of Agnon's own voice reading his own writings.
Well, first of all, I had started studying with Professor Louis Schaffman and Ruben Wallenrod at Brooklyn College. Although I majored in English, my second major was actually Hebrew. Began to read Agnon, fell in love with him, and still, decades later, I'm still reading and discovering more and more.
I know from our many correspondences about your reading.
Yes, and you, thank you. You've been quite helpful to me in those instances where rare words appear or expressions appear. In any case, I had learned that he lived in Talpiot, Yerushalayim. In those days, you could count on the fingers of one hand how many people lived up in Talpiot.
What years are we talking about?
This probably goes back to the late 50s, I would say. So one day I made it up my mind. I was in Israel. I think I had a year off to do my own writing and research, that I was in Israel. And I decided to take a bus up to Talpiot. I get off the proper station and walking up this unpaved road. And I see an elderly man sitting in a folding chair. And I assumed it was Agnon. So I go up to him and I say, Shalom, Haimata Mar Agnon. Hello, are you Mr. Agnon? He didn't reply. He just shook his head from left to right and pointed up the road. That was the house. That was Agnon's house. It was only later that I discovered that there was a kind of, I wouldn't say enmity, but there was an aloofness between Agnon and a great
Joseph
professor of
Klausner.
history, Josef Klausner. I read that when they met on the road walking, they would slowly stop, nod to each other, and pass by each other silently.
Of
Well,
course, for our listeners, Josef Klausner was a very famous professor. He taught in multiple departments in the Hebrew University. He was among the founding faculty at the Hebrew University. He was the losing candidate in the election for the first president of the State of Israel. And these two very, very famous men, this dry Litvak academic, Professor Klausner, a scholar of Talmud and literature and Hebrew, and of course the witty Assisi Glitzianer Agnon, who lives down the block. And this is, of course, documented most famously in the memoirs of Klausner's nephew, Amos Oz, his memoirs, A Tale of Love and Darkness, which describes the chill that would fall over Rehov Yecheskel, as it was called then, when the two gentlemen would meet because of their strained relationship.
Not only was Agnon a Glitziano, I think he also was closely linked to Hasidism,
Yes, on his father's
and
side.
so that too, the Hasid and the Litvak would put the two on a collision course.
So
So
you go down the
I did
block.
finally, finally went up the block and knocked on the door, and he welcomed me very, very warmly. He
As
offered me
you're a young man at this point. You're in your 20s.
before graduate school.
And you knocked on
And
the
he
door.
offered.
You knocked on the door. You said, "I'm Kurt Levient. I'm a student
Yes,
living in the
shalom.
United
And
States."
I greeted him in Hebrew. I said, I'm
Of
a
course.
student. I'm an admirer of your work. I translated one of your stories. He invited me in very warmly. As you can see, I walked in like this with a bare head. He gave me a little drink. I'll tell you an anecdote about a drink in another moment. And then he says to me, he wasn't ashamed of saying, "Tzakeni be'amen." Give me the privilege of saying amen. In other words, hinting to me that
You
I
should
should
say
make
a
a blah.
bracha.
I should say a blessing before drinking. But let me move forward quite a several decades, much, much later, when Erica and I, my wife Erica and I, went to visit him. Of course, by then he had known me. He had known about my translations. He told me how much admired was my Ido and Enam translation, this marvelous novella, which I think is his greatest work. And I think that Ido and Enam also was one of the supreme works of fiction of the 20th century, no matter what language you're dealing with. And he also told me that whenever visitors come to see him who are non-Hebrew speaking, he would give them, because he already had the off-prints and little booklets of Ido and Enam, and he would present this
This copy.
novella to them. But in any case, so here we are, Eric and I, sitting in his house, and typical of Agnon, treatment of visitors, he brings out a plate of cookies and some cognac. Of course, he fills up the little glass to a height much greater than either I or Erica could consume. And so we sipped a little bit of it, we schmoozed some more, and just before we're going, he takes the two glasses, two little glasses, my father would call them Stemperlach, little tiny whiskey glasses, and pours
The
the
remnant.
remainder of what we had not drunk back into the bottle, and he says, "Chaval, chaval, levasbez yash tov." He says, "It would be a pity to waste good
Cognac.
liqueur." So he poured it back into the bottle, and presumably with the alcoholic content, the next drinker would suffer no ill.
No, didn't get your germs.
Yeah.
That story demonstrates two things that seem to be well documented, that Agnew was a great lover of cognac, and also a little bit of a penny pincher.
But from the
So, but let
positive side,
let's but let's
he
yes,
welcomed visitors
you
very
welcome visitors,
graciously.
welcome guests, but he wasn't going to waste good cognac. But let's go back. In other
Of
words,
course.
you first make this first visit as a young man in your 20s, sometime in the mid 50s, because Klausner dies in 58, so that first visit must have been sometime
Was in 57, probably.
mid late 50s,
I
and then
hope
you go.
my remarks to him were not a direct cause of Klausner's death.
Oh, one should hope not. But
Well,
you know,
that's unbelievable.
there are many more anecdotes, some of which may or may not be true, that are much sharper about their relationship than your innocent
Okay.
asking of a question. And then you go back with your wife for the shot of
Years, de
cognac.
decades later.
No, it couldn't have been decades later, because if that was 57, Agnon died in
All right.
1970.
Yeah,
So it must
I'm
have been
hear you.
about
I'm not going to claim.
a decade later.
I'm not going to claim a posthumous visit with
Yes,
Agnon.
yeah. So it must have been in the late, let's say, the late 60s.
Late
Maybe,
68, 69. I
maybe
had
a
a one
decade.
year
Yeah.
sabbatical
Right. So that
from
makes sense. So
yeah.
that's about a year or so before Agnon's death. So describe to me in the 1950s. Let me walk with you into the house. Describe the house to me, your memory of it.
Sorry, I cannot, but I'll tell you that in my novel, The Yemenite Girl,
Oh, we're going to get to that in a moment. Go ahead.
there is a hero very similar to Agnon, whom in the novel I call Yechiel Bar Nun. The visitor hopes that Bar Nun slash Agnon would take him up to his famous library. But Bar Nun does not, and the other protagonist of the novel is very disappointed that he doesn't get a chance to see
And
his
is that
famous
actually,
library.
did you not alight to the
I
library
did
in either of
not.
your visits?
No, I did
Oh,
not.
I'm sorry. Well, you'll have to. Yeah, have you not been back to Beit Agnon in all these years? Oh,
No, I have not.
well, Kurt, I hope that you and your wife will soon visit Yerushalayim again, and we'll be very happy to host you and give you the grand tour of Agnon's library, which, still remains.
Wonderful.
So then you go back to. You go back to America. Agnon passes away a year or two after that second visit in 1970. And
1970, yeah.
in 1973, you write a short story called The Yemenite Girl, which you then expand a couple of years later
Right.
into a novel. If I'm not mistaken, it was your first novel. One of
It was my first published novel, correct.
how many novels do we have now at this point? 14, 15?
14,
14
one
novels
four.
that you've published. And this Yemenite Girl features a Jerusalem author, as you mentioned, named Yechiel Bar Nun. Now, the name Yechiel is on the same kind of register as Shmuel, and
Shmuel, yes.
Bar Nun, five letters ending Nun Vav Nun, like Agnon. It's not so much of a stretch. Agnon himself, of course, was very famous for implanting hidden meaning and hints in the names of his characters. And this author in your novel is somehow an homage to Agnon himself. So for those of us that haven't read the book, and the book is available, it was republished more than once, I believe, and is available. I think the most recent edition was published by Syracuse University Press, and I checked just now on Amazon. It's easy to get, The Yemenite Girl by Kurt Levayant. But give us a little synopsis of that book and how it grew out of that encounter with Agnon.
Well, first I wrote the short story, and then I had the short story implanted into the novel where the hero, Ezra Schultisch, who is a modest instructor of Hebrew language at a small college who loves Agnon and who is dying to get a recording of Agnon's
Who loves
Or
not Agnon, but Bar Nun.
of Bar Nun's famous story, The Yemenite Girl, which is interpreted in mathematical slash literary terms as Kurt Levyant trying to get Agnon to record for him the beautiful fable of a goat, the Maaseh Ha'ez. And the quest is not a very easy one. It involves several phone calls, and there are always delays. Bar Nun, the Nobel laureate, says, "I'm tired. I can't make it. Can you make it another time?" And and Schultisch, the seeker of this recording, feels that the old man may be playing with him, and very likely he does. Until finally, Bar Nun agrees to this recording of the Yemenite girl, just as Agnon agreed finally in 68, 69 to provide the recording. But to my, let's say, ill fortune or good fortune, it so happened that when the date that was set upon in Yerushalayim, I had fallen ill with hepatitis. Nothing grievous, but I had to stay in bed. So I called him up. I told him, I said, "Would you mind if my father came?" He said, "No, not at all." So it was really a wonderful encounter. They were both born in the same year. They both knew Yiddish and Hebrew. And for my tate, my father, it was a wonderful, wonderful experience to spend some time with him again. Agnon being very gracious and warm, and they had a wonderful time together. And
And
I came
it
back.
was recorded in Agnon's home.
It was recorded at Agnon's home on one of these large portable
Reel
tape
to reel,
recorders.
yeah.
Yeah, reel to reel. And I was about, not too long ago, about to surprise you with a gift in the, not hoping, but assuming that you did not have a copy of this, and you wrote back saying that you indeed
We
did have a
indeed
copy.
have it. I don't know. Nobody knows how it came to us, but it's been in Beit Agnon, and it was digitized years ago. It's been available for a long
And it's
time. It's a wonderful to
marvelous to
hear
hear
the.
him. You
Although
hear
it,
him read
yeah.
with the Sephardic accent, but with the Ashkenazic, well, can't call it accent,
The
but
rhythm,
the
yeah.
intonations, of rather than the last
Maaseh
Libi, like he will say Libi instead of Libi,
right.
he'll instead of using the last syllable for accent in
I
the
often,
Sephardic version.
I've been living here in Israel now for over 30 years, and I often say that, one needn't feel bad about his Hebrew accent. We Olim, we who have made our home here from abroad, because you listen to Agnon, the master of the Hebrew language. His accent was much stronger than mine. You listen to recordings of Ben Gurion or Menachem Begin, they sound like Yazeda. It's a different. One needn't feel bad about their accent as long as they nevertheless engage with the Hebrew texts. But he wasn't necessarily on the. There are a few, very few, recordings of him reading his own work. He's not always the best, shall I say, interpreter of his own work. Now, here at this point that he's did this recording for you, he was already quite elderly, certainly by the standards of those years. He passes away a year or two afterwards. But he stumbles over a word here or there. But there's a lovely memoir that Gershom Sholem has of his memories of having met Agnon in the 1920s in Berlin, or even earlier than that, actually. In the late 19-teens, in the war years in Berlin, when Agnon was sojourning there for a dozen or so years. And Shalom describes being at some gathering in which Agnon was reading one of his stories. It turned out that it was the story that becomes, or it was the draft, a draft of the story that becomes Agadat HaSofer, the tale of the scribe, one of his very most beloved works. And Shalom describes the audience sitting around listening to him read, and he said it was like listening to someone chant the Haftorah. Right? There was something ritualistic, performative about it, and even that you can hear in this recording. But one of the interesting things about the recording produced by the Levayant family, father and son, is that when it was taking place, his grandchildren are present, because at the end of the recording, he's like, it's almost as if he's saying a bedtime story to them, because he reads with them Kriyat Shema al Amita, the nighttime reading of Shema Yisrael, and then he says to them, Leil Menuchot Kindalach, right? Good night, children, right? Sweet dreams, children. And they're off to
He
bed
actually says
without
Leil Menuchot. It's
me.
very
I
modern.
believe, yeah, I believe that's the case. We'll link to the recording if you can listen
Laila
to it.
Tov.
Leil Menuchot, I think he says, Kindalach, and the Yeladim. So there's
Well, that
something.
book also came out as a first came out as a children's book. Maaseh, its fables of Go.
Right, it came out in when it was published in 1925. It came out simultaneously as a children's book with illustrations by
With
Zev
illustrators.
Rabban, of the Bezalel School, and also published in an adult literary journal. But why was that story? You had already translated that story when you have this encounter with him, correct?
Yes,
So that is that.
it was published in the old Jewish Heritage Monthly, which Lily Edelman edited for the B'nai B'rith magazine.
And how did
Yeah.
that come about? That was your first translation of Agnon.
No, my first translation was the Shanim HaTovot years
Animatovo.
earlier for the Jewish Frontier,
I see.
a
And how did these
neighbor.
translations come about? These Jewish magazines and journals,
They
they would just commission a
were
translation.
welcoming. They had pure Jewish content, and they were welcoming for fiction. So when I proposed, would you like to see a translation of an unknown story? They welcomed it, and they liked it, and they published it.
That's the interesting thing. A couple of years ago, when I headed up this, pretty significant project from the Toby Press, the new editions of Agnon's writings in annotated translations, and what we call the Agnon Library, 15 volumes. Some of them were newly commissioned translations, and it's so interesting because some of his most significant works had not yet been translated. And some of his stories, which frankly are not the most significant, stories that aren't read or well known in Hebrew, had been translated decades and decades ago. There was no necessary rhyme or reason of what got translated when. But in trying to gather up all of the existing translations so that they could be anthologized if they were up to snuff, and not all the translations were, we found the translations in the Canadian Jewish News and in, small like Jewish Federation newspapers and in similar platforms that were done in England or Australia or South Africa, Hadassah magazine, these types of things. And in a lot of these cases, there was one, I believe he was a rabbi somewhere out in, if I'm not mistaken, Winnipeg, or not a major metropolis of Jewish life. And he was a Hebraist. And he would probably doodle around translating short stories, and he would send it into the Canadian Jewish News, and they would pay him $5 for his translation, or maybe something like that, and it would be published. And since it was in a kind of local Jewish newspaper, it flew under the radar, and people didn't necessarily know about it because it hadn't been reprinted, elsewhere. And the whole history of the translation, not just of Agnon, but of Hebrew and Yiddish literature in general itself, is a fascinating one. And you played a significant role in that, along with lots of other people. So I'm interested in hearing how you got into that and some of your thoughts about translation. We should just let
First of
people
all,
know that we should
let me
just,
backtrack to.
yeah.
I want to backtrack to Canadian Jewish News. That was published and read almost all over Canada. There were very, very few Canadian Jewish publications. They died a few years ago, but I
Yes,
understand
yes.
they came back as a kind of an online
Online website,
format. But let me tell you that when I was sending out stuff to Jewish friends, there was a period when there were quite a number of Anglo-Jewish magazines. The Jewish Frontier was connected to a Jewish labor foundation or group. There was the Independent Jewish Spectator, which Judy Weiss-Rosmarin edited. There was the B'nai B'rith Jewish Heritage. It was Midstream magazine. None of these exist anymore. Hadassah is the only one that still exists. And then Tablet, as of a few years ago,
Yes, you've
came
been
back
publishing things in Tablet, yes.
online.
Yeah.
And they told me they have a hiatus of 2, 3 months, and they're coming back as a print. In addition to online, Tablet is going to be on
Well,
print soon.
commentary is still around, and they were a
Yeah,
significant platform.
commentary. Yes,
Commentary was a
yes.
significant platform for translating. They translated
Yes, that's how I
quite a
got
bit of Agnon.
I got my first Shalom Aleichem commission in book form after having published one of Shalom Aleichem's satires in commentary. And then Thomas Yoseloff, the publisher, wrote to me saying, would you be interested in doing a full volume?
Right,
So that was my first
let's
book.
talk a little bit about your career in again, you had a long career in academia. You taught principally for many years for quite a few decades in Rutgers, if I'm not
Yes,
mistaken. And then of
correct.
course you were a novelist on the side. And then you were involved in this massive translation project, which you're still dabbling. I don't want to give away anything, although the Googler can find your date of birth online, but you're not in your 20s anymore, the age you were when you first encountered Agnon, and
Well,
you still have
obviously, if I'm out of my 20s,
your
I'm in my 30s. What's up?
30s times three, but you still have your wheel to the to the to the your shoulder to the wheel, and you're still publishing new translations of Shalom Aleichem. I think one of the interesting things is that you're revisiting stories that you translated years ago and giving them a new life, which is a
Well,
fascinating
first of all, let me tell you about
thing.
a novel, short novel of Shalom Aleichem's called Moshkele Ganef, Moshkele the Thief,
Yes, I have it right here on
which
the shelf.
I didn't realize, but when I got into it, I realized that here is a work of Shalom Aleichem that was not included in that massive 28-volume collection of Alevelk, the complete works of Shalom Aleichem. I
In
don't
Yiddish,
know
not
why.
collected in his complete Yiddish works, let alone
Yeah.
in his translations to Hebrew or English.
In other words, in the collection of the Yiddish writers, posthumous, full collection of work, collected works of Shalom Aleichem, this little novel, Moshkele Ganef, Moshkele the Thief, was not published. And I proposed the idea to the Jewish Publication Society, explained the book. So the editor then says to me, usually I have to go through my board of trustees. He says, but in this case, I'm not. Just send me the manuscript. And it was very,
And
very well
it's a
received.
charming book. And in the introduction, you tell the story of how it came about, and it's a lovely. But just to help the listener understand,
Oh, let me tell you, it was just translated into Italian.
into Italian, okay,
Yeah, which is lovely to have a work.
translated from Yiddish into Italian, or from your
No, from the
translation English into Italian.
a Jewish publisher, Guintana Press, who took my novel, The Man Who Thought He Was Messiah, about Reb Nachman of Bratslav. He had it translated from my English into the Italian. And so we've been in contact. And I suggested this book to him. He read it. He said, I'll translate it myself from the English.
English,
And it came out in Italian, and it was beautifully reviewed by one of Italy's leading novelists, Eri De Luca.
So, but
Yes.
let's just back up for a second and explain to
Back
our
up,
listeners.
sure.
In other words, your career in translation has focused, of course, you've done a number of Agnon stories and a few other works from Hebrew to English, but much of your work has focused, of course, on the classics of Yiddish literature, Shalom Aleichem, Basheva Singer, and perhaps most significantly, your work with Chaim Grade, with whom you had a personal relationship
Yes.
towards the end of his life.
Yes.
Perhaps most famously, your two-volume translation of his Tzemach Atlas in English called The Yeshiva, perhaps his most significant work, although of course his story The Aguna and and others. So tell us a little bit about how you got into that work of translation, and tell us a little bit about your both what you were setting out to do in introducing this literature to the English-speaking audience, and a little bit about your theory of translation. You wrote about this not long ago in a essay in the Jewish Review of Books on the occasion of some round anniversary of
Yeah, it was the 100th.
Adam's 100th
It was
birthday.
the
It was his, the
yeah,
anniversary of his 100th birthday.
2010.
Yeah. So it's a little essay. Readers can find it in the Jewish Review of Books called Translating and Remembering Chaim Grada. And there you, besides sharing some juicy anecdotes, you set forth something about your theory of translating an author like Shalom Aleichem, or more specifically, an author like Grada or Agnon, who are very, very much more rooted in the world of rabbinic literature and tradition. So
Now, okay,
tell us a little bit about your work in translation and your theory of translation.
so I don't know if I ever use the word theory, but I do. First, let me back up with an anecdote. When my father years ago gave me my first book of Shalom Aleichem in Yiddish, I mean, we had spoken Yiddish at home, so this was not a foreign language to me. The next morning, he tells my mother, "Unser Sohn liegt in bed. Our son is lying in bed. Und lehen Shalom Aleichem, and is reading Shalom Aleichem. Und lacht die ganze Nacht, and he laughs all night long." The interesting thing was that as I was reading Shalom Aleichem, from right to left, in my mind, from left to right, the English was percolating. So I was even unconsciously,
And
as
you're
it
how
were,
old in at this time? How old are you when
oh,
this
it
time?
was in my 20s. So percolating in my mind is already the translation of this text. And later on, that's what I did. I took one of his satirical stories, sent it to commentary. Commentary loved it, published it. And a month or so later, I got a letter from Thomas Yasseloff, the publisher, and he asked me to create, if I wished to, a complete volume of stories.
And
So,
this is in the 1950s.
yeah, it was 59. It came out in 59. Yeah, my first book, and to a degree, by having a first book, it actually opened the path for me to get a
To get
job
other commissions.
at the university.
I
I
see.
had a book in hand. Anyway, so never mind the theory, but with Shalom Aleichem, with Chaim Grade, with Agnon, especially with Agnon and Grade, you could know the language. You could know Yiddish, you could know Hebrew. But if you don't know that mysterious other language, your translation cannot be accurate and cannot reflect the Yiddish or the Hebrew text. And that mysterious third language is Yiddishkeit.
Not
You must
Yiddish, but Yiddishkeit.
Yiddishkeit, the whole gamut of Judaism, its texts, its customs, its liturgy, the air that floats around being a Jew, and in most cases, an observant Jew, because you cannot understand the lines between the lines and the words between the words, either in Agnon or in Chaim Grade, if you don't know Yiddish.
In
As
that
simple as that.
essay you write very beautifully, a translator must know the hidden corners of a culture.
That's very nicely said. Who wrote that?
And that was you, sir.
That's me. Oh, I wish I could write like that. Wow.
Hidden corners of a culture. And then you in the essay you demonstrate it with a couple of examples from Tzemach Atlas, from the yeshiva, of passages that in order to get into them, in order to understand them, the rabbinic shaklavataria, the flow and ebb and flow of the conversation, one really must be conversant in that world, in that culture, and it's the challenge of the translator to build a bridge to the reader who, presumably, if they're unable to read in the original, may be at a remove from that.
Do you have an example of that? Can
Well,
you see that?
the example that you bring, and I'd be ashamed to try to read it in the Yiddish myself, but it begins, Adrabba Rabbosai, Wegen de Scheile, Paskin de Rosh Tomid, Letzad Kule. And then it goes
Okay.
on.
It's, what do you mean? What do you mean? That's perfectly done.
Oh.
Don't be so modest. Yeah. So even with the first two words. Adraba, you have to know what Adraba is and what
Well,
the
first of all,
hidden
you have to be aware that you're speaking three different languages simultaneously. There's an Aramaic layer, there's a Tanyic
Aramaic,
Aramaic, there's
right.
Hebrew, and in this
Yeah,
case, there's Lithuanian
that's
Yiddish.
correct. That's correct. Yeah, I always say, yeah. So you have that. I forgot to mention Aramaic, of course. So you have it's trilinguality. So that so the Yiddishkeit language is the fourth language.
And then you bring a
So.
few examples of a few real blunders that other translators had committed in because they were unfluent in the Yiddishkeit, even as they had Yiddish, which, by the way, is something, of course, that translators of Agnon have stumbled on, as well. Some very famous blunders in translating Agnon,
I
always
remember
because.
one passage where a translator footnotes one of his lines where he says that it's the custom of Jews to sprinkle little crumbs of the matzah in the river before Rosh Hashanah. So he's creating a new Passover for the Jewish.
Combining something about Passover and Tashlich for Rosh Hashanah,
Yeah, it's
smashing up
very
two.
strange. In other words, the guy didn't know what he was talking about.
In
It's
a
as simple as that.
famous blunder in a translation of Agnon, there's a character, a very, very pious character, who's careful to lechabeset begadav be'erev Shabbat lechvoda Shabbat, to laud to launder his clothing on Friday in honor of the Sabbath. And because in contemporary colloquial Hebrew, Erev Shabbat is often used, Erev Shabbat in halachic language means Friday afternoon, the time period before the onset of the Sabbath, the time period where you perform all of your preparations, your cooking, your washing, your cleaning in advance of lighting candles and starting Shabbat. But in colloquial modern Hebrew, Erev Shabbat is Friday night when you sit down to the table with your gefilte fish and matzo ball soup. So the translator turned this pious character to a Sabbath violator by translating Hayah mechabeset begadav be'erev Shabbat lechvoda Shabbat as he would launder his clothing on Friday night in honor of the Sabbath. That's an example of the kind of lack of understanding
Isn't
of
there a
the.
slight difference between Erev Shabbat and Leil Shabbat?
In contemporary Hebrew, but in rabbinic Hebrew, Erev Shabbat means Erev Shabbat is the period before the onset of the Shabbat. But
Before the
in
onset.
yeah, but in contemporary Hebrew, Erev Shabbat it takes on the meaning of Leil Shabbat, meaning Friday
Didn't
night.
know that.
And
Didn't know
the
that.
translator missed this and misunderstood, so.
Let me tell you a story about having a test that Grade gave me. I had already translated the Aguna. I had already
First of all,
translated.
before you get to that, how did you come
Well,
into his orbit? How did you meet him personally?
I reviewed a novel that had been translated, The Well. I reviewed The Well. I think Ruth Weiss translated it. I reviewed it for the New York Times and I gave it a glowing review. Beautiful novel, beautiful translation. And somehow Grada got in contact with me. He said, I see you know Yiddish, you know the ins and outs. Would you be interested in translating a Holocaust memoir of mine? I said, I certainly would. And I did. It was called The Seven Little Lanes, about his return to Vilna after the war and seeing the ruins. Then he asked me to do the Aguna, which I did. It was also very well received. And then he was prepared to undergo, to get the yeshiva, the two-volume yeshiva translated. But we had a phone relationship first. And then once I started with the yeshiva, he invited me.
He lived in the Bronx,
So
and you were then already
he
in
lived in the
university.
Bronx. Yeah, it was a long, long ride. I would go by car. And then we got to know each other to the point where it was not Mr. Grade and not Reb Chaim, but Chaim and Kurt. And we would exchange visits, especially he would love to come over when my parents were there, because then he could speak a juicy Russian Yiddish with them. But before he asked me to translate the yeshiva, he says, you have to excuse me, but I have to ask you to give me a sample page of the first page. I said, why? He said, well, all right, I'll tell you. He says, on the first page, the phrase Emuna, Emuna Shleima appears, which means
Perfect faith.
devote full faith. He said that translated, I had tried with somebody else earlier, and when it came to Emuna Shleima, the person didn't know what that phrase meant. So he translated it as, because the letters for Shlema are exactly Shin,
Shlomo.
Lamed, Mem, Hey, as the King Solomon, Shlomo, without dots underneath. A novice, somebody who doesn't know
Right. I mean,
what
he
full
misread the word
faith
and thought
means.
it was the
So he translated
Solomon's
it
faith.
as the faith of Solomon, which already showed Grade
Was a
that
red
this
was
guy
a
could
was
not
a
be
was a red
trusted,
flag.
was not could not be trusted with rabbinic. In other words, the Yiddishkeit language of Yiddishkeit was foreign to him. So he says, do me a favor. He says, just the first two pages at least. So I
Audition.
translated, pardon?
It was your audition.
Yeah, except that I had already translated two of his books,
Okay.
the Holocaust memoir and the novel The Aguna, which Elie Wiesel gave a beautiful review to in the New York Times.
But Grade saw the yeshiva, saw Tzemach Atlas as his magnum opus.
Yes, and it
He
is
was
indeed.
protective of it in a way
Yes,
that
absolutely. So I translate the first page, and I, in my typed version, and when it comes to Emunah Shleima, I write the faith of Solomon.
you make the same mistake as the previous translator.
I make the same mistake as the previous. And
But you did it intentionally.
I enclose a little envelope plus a letter. In this letter, I say, Chaim, maybe by them it was Reb Chaim, I said, read my first page, your first page. And after you read it, but do not open up the envelope until we speak about your reaction to my translation of this page. I mail it to him. He calls me up. I says, no. He says, hey, nicht schlecht, sehr gut, not bad, very good, but you made one mistake. I said, what mistake? He says, you also translated Emunah Shleima as the faith of Solomon. I said, Chaim, did you open up the envelope? He said, what are you talking about? Open the envelope. You told me not to open up the envelope until we speak. I said, okay, open up the envelope. So I'm imagine, I mean, I don't see this, But I do hear the tear of the
Paper
album,
ripping, yeah.
paper ripping up. So I'm like, he starts laughing. He says, "Du Ganef, du hast mir abgetan a Spitzel. You rascal, you put one over on me." So, I mean, that was the
Because he
sort of,
was
we
testing
had
you, but you were testing him.
we had a wonderful, wonderful relationship. It was almost like an uncle and nephew, or even father and son.
And once you really got into that, how long did it take you? It's a very long, it's two volumes. It's a very long,
Yeah, it was more of it.
yeah.
What, by the way, it was 1 year at a time, one novel at a time.
Fine, right.
The first volume came out, and then but you talk about a year and a half, I would say, to translate. And then volume two.
And he was involved with you the whole time. You would review the translation, or you had a free hand?
Well, a freehand, really free. I mean, I would, no, he was, he wouldn't be reading the pages, no, freehand. And when I had some problem, of course, we would discuss. In fact, I would love to go up to visit him. And as I said, we developed a very, very hugging, embracing, kissing. I mean, can you imagine? Like an uncle, like a father. Except there was one impediment in this lovely
Those that know
warm
anything about
relationship.
Grado will know what your next sentence will be, but fill us in.
He had a wife named Ina, who was terribly jealous of anybody becoming in any way involved, affectionately friendly with him. And she put her foot down. She tried to interfere. My hunch was that she could not read Yiddish, although later on a couple of books came out which said translated by Ina Grada. She did not know how to read Yiddish. My hunch was that she wasn't even Jewish. One day in December, I came into the house, and guess what? At the end of December, in Chaim Grada's living room,
Hard to believe.
a Christmas tree. Christmas tree. That this happened to me also once when I was in Israel. During one of my earlier years, visiting and saying hello and writing about the various living Hebrew writers, Chaim Hazaz, Yehuda Yari was very friendly. I got to know him very well. And Gershon Shofman, and in his house too in December, I saw a Christmas tree. But Ina Grada said that this was in honor of her father. That's how she explained it.
Oh, interesting, but there's no, she lived for many years
She
after
died
he
just a
passed
few
away,
years ago, yeah.
just a few years ago, and of course she controlled his estate,
Yeah.
which explains part of the reason he did not achieve the fame that other authors did. And many people, we've had conversations here at Beit Agnon with Ruth Weiss and with others, of course. There are many people think that he was as great or greater than Bat-Sheva Singer,
But he
who
could not capture the attention. And no matter how many translations there were of his work, because Isaac Bashevis Singer caught the spirit of the English reader with the women, the love affairs, the adventures, the ghosts. I mean, it was very hard to compare. Very hard to compare.
Certainly
I mean,
there's more of that Yiddishkeit of what you spoke of
yeah.
in Grade than there is in Singer.
And his output was not
Was
as
yeah, it was not as much. So, no, but
they
it also
both
explains why
wrote
some of
Hebrew.
his books, many of Grade's books, including the Yeshiva, have been out of print for quite a while, though I understand there's an attempt now to put out new editions.
You see, Batsheva Singer would write a short story a week in for the
In the
forwards,
forwards.
and Grada would write a chapter of a novel every week, let's say for the Morgenjournal. And it was not so easy to publish little chapters in English translations as it was to publish the short stories. He told me a wonderful story. He once got, oh, I come, yeah, maybe you read this. I come up to visit him 3 weeks or 2 weeks before Pesach up in the Bronx. And he points to a little square box about 2 feet square and 1 inch high. He says, "Is this what this is? You see, you know what that is?" I recognized it right away. It was a box of
Schmuermatze.
Schmuermatte. He says, "Du weißt, wer hat mir geschickt? You know who sent this to me?" I said, "How should I know?" He says, "The Lubavitcher Rebbe. The Lubavitcher Rebbe. Schneerson. Mit a persönlichen Schliach. With a personal messenger. Every Erev Pesach, the Rebbe would send him a box of
Message.
Shmuramatz."
That's
So I
interesting.
said to him, "Chaim, du pravest a Seder?" I said, "You, Chaim?
Make a
You
Seder.
secular Jew," in parentheses, you secular Jew, "you make a Seder." He says, "It's angry." He says, "What's Mensch do? What are you talking about? Do you mean Sichmin a Goy? You think I'm a Goy?" He did. He had a Seder. But
Okay.
he says, "You know, one day I get a call from the Rebbe. And the Rebbe says, 'Du feelst nicht gut? You don't feel well?' So Chaim says, 'How did you know I wasn't feeling well?' He says, 'Because for the past 2 weeks, I haven't seen the chapters of the yeshiva in the Yiddish paper.'" Can you imagine that the Lubavitcher Rebbe was reading
Reading.
his installments of the novel, The Yeshiva, every week? And when for 2 weeks it didn't appear, he guessed correctly
That
that
there wasn't
Chaim
feeling
was
okay.
not well, and he called him up about this.
In the collection of letters of Rabbi Soloveitchik, he also has a pretty forceful statement about Grade and what he does to
And you know,
capture this world.
the two knew each other.
Yes, yes,
Soloveitchik
yes.
and the Rebbe knew each other.
Yeah, of
They
course, of
met when they
course.
were both
Yeah,
university students
yeah.
in Berlin. Very few people.
But the point is that Rabbi Soloveitchik was also reading Grade and thought highly of it and thought there was like a
Yeah.
significant capturing of this world gone by.
Well,
When you
to
were,
live.
as we're wrapping up, when you look back on your work of translation of and translation is a complicated cultural act. And to pass over the works of the classics of Hebrew and Yiddish literature, both authors that you overlapped with, authors who you had personal connections to, as well as the greats that came before. Of course, we didn't mention Lamed Shapiro, who was earlier in your career a significant figure,
Avram Raisin.
and Avraham Raisin, and of course Shalom Aleichem, who we did speak about. What was your who did you imagine your audience was? What were you hoping that they were going to receive through the translation?
That's
Of
an
course.
interesting question, but you know something? I wasn't thinking about an audience. I was thinking about doing my best. And I have to add that besides knowing those three or four languages, you also have to be a good writer.
Oh, you have
And
to, yeah,
I'm
for
not
sure.
ashamed to say that I am a good writer. In other words, you have to put the words in not only, and sometimes leave a word out when it's necessary,
Yeah,
and
yeah.
sometimes add a word or two when it is necessary.
Right.
So you have to be conscious of your writing and your writing skills so that the English version
Yes,
is
right.
as good in written form as the original that you're
As the
working from.
apocryphal Yiddish translator of Shakespeare claimed, his version was verteidigt
Parshenet, parshenet und verbessert,
und
improved upon, absolutely right.
verbessert. Only the imagined apocryphal Yiddish author would have the gall to claim that he was improving the bard.
But listen, I have to add that there's one wonderful work that I translated from Hebrew, and that's the Maharal's version of the Golem stories, which are written
Your,
by
you know, it's your translation of Yodel Rosenberg's
Yudl Rosenberg. I wouldn't, yeah. But
stories
very few
of the
people
Golem.
know of Yudl Rosenberg, although many people know
Although
about the Maharal.
there's recently been some work done on Yodel Rosenberg, and his escapades
Yes, that's a
that
wonderful
come to life.
collection, and Yale University Press put it out when Yale University Press was directed by Jonathan Brent, who later became and is still the
Right.
executive director of YIVO.
That's your 2007 edition, The Golem and the Wondrous Deeds of the Mahral of Prague by
Yes.
Udo Rosenberg, translated by
Yeah.
Kurt Levine. But let's try to sum up here with one question. If you didn't have a kind of imagined audience in your head when you were doing the work, but now that you look back on your very impressive body of work, of your translation work, and on another occasion we should really talk about your own original writing. But your translation work, you know, there are generations of readers, Jewish and non-Jewish, in the English-speaking world, who know Shalom Aleichem because they saw Fiddler on the Roof on the screen or the stage, and because they read it in your book. And no doubt many of those that first encountered Tevye on the screen then go on to find him on the page in your translations. What do you hope that they're getting through your
Just,
work?
I want to correct. I only translated one tiny Tevye story. The Tevye
Okay,
stories were actually
understood. So the world,
translated before mine.
the world of Shalom Aleichem, if not the Tevye stories, then the entire canon, the other canon of Shalom Aleichem, Chaim Grade, Shev Singer, of Agnon, etc., of you name it. What do you hope that the reader of Agnon, the reader of Ido and Ve'Enam, of Maaseh Ha'ez, of Shanim HaTovot, right, who sadly, tragically, can't encounter him in the original Hebrew. What do you think? What do you hope that he'll find there? Your readers now, your readers in
I
generations
hope
to
they
come?
would find the same genius, the same literary genius that they would find when they read, just like I did when my parents inculcated in me early on, because they were Russian Jews, Chekhov and Tolstoy and Dostoevsky and Gogol. And by reading in translation, with good translation, you read a masterwork. So just as I read the masterworks of Gogol and Chekhov, I hope that readers in English of Shalom Aleichem and Chaim Grade would also get the sense that they are reading a world supreme author in the language that they are familiar with.
So let me pose to you a question that I encounter all the time. You know, knowing that I've translated a bit of Agnon, Israelis in their characteristic Hebrew chauvinism will ask me, "Eich efshar letargem et Agnon? How could you possibly translate Agnon? Everything is lost in translation." So I have a set of answers to that question, but what do you say to that if posed to you
I would
about
use,
Agnon or about any of the other authors
I
you've
would take
worked
the
with?
word, that same sentence that you said, instead of lost, I would add gained. Everything is gained in translation. You have another work that you would not otherwise have in the body of world literature.
Literature.
So to have Grade and to have Shalom Aleichem in English, you're enhancing, you're gaining in the bookshelf the great writers of the world in a language that you can understand, whereas otherwise you would have it lost,
Well,
gained in translation.
for that, Kurt Levient, we are very grateful to you for your very, very impressive body of work that you've created and that, thank God, you're continuing to create. And we look forward
Thank you.
to seeing more of your essays and your translations and your
Could I
work.
just add one line?
Absolutely.
The line I want to add is that as a novelist and also as a translator, especially as a novelist, it gives me great joy to see that my own works have been translated into 9 European languages and into Hebrew.
Wonderful.
So maybe some other time we'll talk about
So our
that.
listeners can go online and you can find all of Kurt's works. I think almost all of them are still in print, his original works, his translated works. You can find them online. You can dip into them. We recommend starting with The Yemenite Girl,
Yeah,
which is his novel that intersects and fictionalizes his own fascinating encounter with Agnon, from which we benefited by having Agnon's own voice recorded reading Maaseh Ha'ez, the fable of the goat. Kurt Levian, thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Shalom to you all.